Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Therein sits Carrie Peck, the elder law attorney at Peck Ritchie. Hi, Carrie. How are you?
Good morning, John. How are you? I want you to know that one of my first jobs was pumping gas.
So how about that?
I can relate to that.
Isn't that a great thing?
It is. It's a way to learn a lot about people very quickly.
Why do you say that?
Well, I think that, you know, people had particular interests in what marks on their windshields were being cleaned, and did you wash the headlights properly, and you needed to show them the dipstick as you checked the oil.
Oh, that's right. Gosh, this is me sitting in the back seat and them doing it for my mom or dad. That's right. Like a fine wine, they would display it for you. Here you are, sir. Here's your dipstick.
Exactly right.
As you can see, that's clean oil all the way up to the little dotted line. I mentioned Ask Anne. It's Ask Amy, Amy Dickinson. Can I just read you a short thing in the Tribune today?
Absolutely.
Dear Amy Dickinson, I'm halfway through a two-week visit with my 89-year-old mom, and my stress level is through the roof. Halfway through a two-week visit with her 89-year-old mom. On the one hand, I know her life isn't easy due to numerous health issues, including memory and vision loss, plus the death of my dad over a year ago. On the other hand, and my siblings would all agree, she makes everything so much harder than it has to be for herself and for everyone around her. The criticisms, complaints, put-downs, and need to control everything make it so hard to find the patience I should have. It doesn't take very long when trying to do anything with her before I'm frustrated at the way she treats me, at what I'm being put through to try and help her, and I hate myself for it. She's 89, she's alone, she's my mom. Why can't I be more tolerant? And Amy Dickinson said, the reason you can't be more tolerant is because it's a huge heartbreaking experience to care for elderly people. This is one reason that professional caregivers are worth their weight in gold. And the next sentence is so true. Caregivers outside the family are not triggered by a lifetime of memories of their client. Carrie, the people that help my mom and dad are almost always nicer to my mom and dad than I am. They're more loving. They are more empathetic. You know, my sister and I get in there, and a lot of times it's business. Okay, what do we got to do? And then we put up with their, you know, complaints and stuff like that. And I watch these professionals who care for them, and I think, what's wrong with me? But I wonder if you can relate to or understand my experience or the experience of this woman.
Well, John, my mom is 95 years old. And as we speak, my wife has taken my mother this morning to the audiologist, and where they're going to refit her for new hearing aids. So not only can I relate, I think people of our age, as it were, are all experiencing these types of situations. And you're lucky that your parents have great caregivers. You know, there's a lot of people out there who can't find caregivers, can't afford caregivers. There's clearly a shortage of caregivers. And some caregivers, you know, are in and out looking at their watch the whole time.
Yeah,
so,
no, that's true, too.
You know, this is just a very difficult situation. I agree with the columnist who indicates, you know, we all bring a basket of memories, all of our years of memories back watching our parents as their health declines and as they become more obstinate, as they become more paranoid, as they become less able to see things and to care for themselves. And there is no easy answer to any of this. It's really not one size fits all.
I don't know what advice you have for the adult siblings to try and manage that, but what would you say? Because my sister does a lot of the work. She's closest physically, if nothing else, to my parents. But you know what Mary has to do a lot too? Take off work to take them to appointments. And I wish there was some way to at least accommodate that in the world. I'm like, Dad, every time Mary takes you to get your knee fixed, she misses half a day of work. That's either vacation or money out of her pocket. And what else are we going to do? You know, that's the life she's and we're living right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think that every family has to work out, you know, their own dynamics, really. And you know, whether or not you hire a professional caregiver or whether the family can step up and do it, clearly work, people that are still working full time bear the brunt of all of this. And again, I just think that you need to sit down and have a family meeting. You need to get everybody in the room at the same time these days, since people live across the country, get them all on a Zoom call and have a very blunt discussion. What are you going to do, even though you live halfway across the country, to help mom and dad? If we hire caregivers, are you going to be able to contribute? If we don't hire caregivers, are you going to be able to come in 4th of July weekend so the local kids can have the weekend off? I mean, it is really a very difficult, made-to-order situation in family dynamics.
This is not my family now, but you're making me think, is there any accounting of that? What if one of the siblings says, I've lost money, so when mom or dad dies, I want some of that back?
Yeah, we see it all the time, and the reality is it's up to the family to really figure that out. I would encourage, there are really some prototypes for family employment agreements, to the extent that, you know, I am a daughter, I am giving up my full-time job, or I'm working half-time so that I can take care of mom and dad, and as a result, I believe that under our family agreement, I want you to agree that I'm entitled to $10,000 for my time, and when mom and dad are gone, that $10,000 is coming from their assets. So that is a possibility. But again, those are pretty difficult circumstances to navigate, because one family member is going to go, you're a greedy you-know-what, and the other one's going to say, why can't you volunteer your time? That's what we've been doing for 20 years.
Is that a contract you would draw up if you were going to do that?
I would encourage people to literally, if you plan to be paid, you should get it in writing, and the family should participate.
I think Medicaid or Medicare should pay family members who stay at home or work half-time, because it's cheaper probably to all of us to compensate a family member than it is to put them in a third-party facility.
I agree with you. There's no question about it. In my family, we're very lucky that my wife, who's now retired from her teaching position, is taking care of my mother, and we don't anticipate ever asking for any money.
And that's not her mother either.
That's right. That's right. But I'm here with you.
Our number is 312-981-7200. Well, that's just a starting point. Every time you come in, we get a lot of questions from listeners about estate plans, about wills. Is there anything foremost on your mind today that we should maybe address with our listeners? I know you've been working on fraudulent schemes that prey on older people.
We have been working on that, and I would encourage your listeners, you know, particularly around the holidays, you may get phone calls that sound legitimate. You may get a pitch, knock at the door that sounds legitimate. But the reality, ladies and gentlemen, is if it's too good to be true, then it really is too good to be true.
Here is a letter from one of our listeners, an email that came in after you left last time. The next time you have Carrie Peck on, please ask him if there's ever been any criminal prosecutions when an adult child has been found guilty in civil court of exerting egregious and even undue influence on a parent with advanced dementia. I know a woman who cared for her elderly mother with Alzheimer's, who talked her into leaving all of her assets and cutting out the other three siblings. Now, notice this person said, is there criminal prosecution of this civil liability?
Well, the answer is that generally there is not. It depends on the state's attorney of each county. Out in Kane County, Jamie Mosser is prosecuting a lot of financial exploitation cases. Here in Cook County, there don't appear to be as many being prosecuted. So it depends on the priorities of the community.
This is an interesting kind of exploitation, though, isn't it? This isn't some hacker in Russia sending them a bogus email. This is one of the kids simply manipulating mom and dad. Probably the state doesn't want to get involved in that. They're going to ask you to make that a civil resolution, right?
Yes. Yes, that's correct.
And there probably is recourse in civil court, right?
There is recourse in civil court, yes. You can certainly assert that a child is taking advantage of mom or dad in civil court. No question.
And in this particular case, getting mom or dad to maybe sign something that says all of the assets go to the one child and not the others. If I were a judge, my starting point would be that looks fishy. That looks suspicious.
Well, I agree with you, but in a civil setting, with these taking advantage of scenarios or undue influence scenario, the judge can always enter a judgment against that child who's found to be taken advantage of. It's in civil court, but you can get a civil money judgment against that child.
The one that, in fact, has all the money.
Or stole the money.
Yeah.
Okay. And that judgment is able to be what lawyers call enforced against that child's bank account, property, home, whatever they may own.
How do I prove that, though? I mean, how does a judge know, even though you and I are on the same page, maybe I'm a jerk and mom really didn't like me and it was a conscious decision to exclude me from the will?
Well, clearly there's going to have to be an airing of both sides. There's going to be a trial. There's going to be witnesses. You know, if mom had a lawyer draft her documents, and perhaps that lawyer has notes and discussed with mom the reasons for cutting out child number three.
And you don't have to have any other reason other than this is my money and I'm going to do with it what I want. You could leave it to a cat, right?
Well, I wouldn't recommend that. But you certainly could leave it to an animal shelter or something of that nature.
My point is, though, you don't have to have just cause. Mom can just say, I don't want you to have the money.
There's only one person you can't disinherit in Illinois, and that's your spouse. Okay?
So if you die, your spouse is what?
Your spouse gets what's called a statutory forced share if they're disinherited, which generally is one-third, could be up to one-half.
Even if you're divorced? I guess they're not
a spouse
anymore.
They're married. Only married
spouse. Even if you've been estranged, as long as you're technically married, the spouse that survives gets how much?
A forced statutory share, which was started at one-third, depending on whether there were children or otherwise.
You've got a question for Kerry Peck with Peck Ritchie. He is the elder law attorney in Illinois that helps so many of you. By the way, I'll give his phone number here in a second, or his web address. His first consultation with you is free, so if you do think that your family could use a little advice in court or out of court, that's what Kerry Peck does. Take some calls, Kerry?
Of course.
Let's see here. Let's do Brad. You're on WGN. Brad, how can we help you? You're on the air.
Oh, hi, guys.
Hey.
Thanks for taking the call. My question is, when a trustee is distributing assets, like, for example, a couple hundred thousand dollars from a bank account, does that trustee need to set up a separate account, or can they distribute the assets from the bank account?
What type of trust is it, Brad? Is it a revocable living trust?
A revocable living trust, correct.
You should be able to take the assets directly from the bank account and distribute it to the people that get it.
Okay, so they do not need to create a new separate trust account and then distribute the assets. Okay.
No, I don't see any reason. But make sure you get receipts from the people that get the money. That helps you avoid going through that hassle.
Yep, I completely understand. Thank you very, very much.
Hey, Brad, I'm glad
Thanks
you called. How about this one? Please ask Kerry Peck about this. My parents quickly claimed their house to my sisters 15 years ago. Since then, my father died, and my mother moved to a private pay-assisted living. And we need to sell that house, but one of the sisters refuses to sign off on it. Seems there's nothing we can do to sell the house to fund the assisted living costs. Well, if you've given the house to the sisters and one of them didn't want to give it up, I don't know what recourse they have.
I don't think they have any recourse. And I assume the quickly means quit claim deed. There is no recourse there. If the other sister won't agree, you're stuck. There's just no good answer.
But that's mom and dad's house. I don't know why she quit claimed it to you, but so then what happens to, I guess if you have zero assets, then what do you go on Medicaid? Is that
right? If you have zero assets you need nursing home assistance, you can go on Medicaid and the state and federal program will pay for your care.
Question for Kerry Peck. Should I title my brokerage account in the name of my trust or make my trust the beneficiary of the brokerage account. I don't know what I just said.
If you have a revocable living trust, you should make sure that the assets are titled to the trust. So hypothetically, my assets are in the Carrie Peck trustee of the revocable Carrie Peck trust dated, you know, today's date. Put the assets in the trust. Very important. If your assets aren't retitled into the trust, then the trust is not going to serve the purpose for which it was created.
630 said about that column in the Tribune, the Ask Amy, it is very difficult for only kids. Yeah, if you don't have siblings to share the responsibilities. No one to bounce ideas off. Try having divorced parents in their late 80s in different states. Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah.
Not a pretty picture.
You know, because we're all living longer. So I think those of you who are in your 50s or 60s and have parents in their 80s or 90s, you may have kids, you may have grandkids. You are in the middle, financially, emotionally, physically. And that was not my parents' experience, because my parents in their 80s and 90s, well, their parents didn't live to be in their 80s or 90s. They don't know what we are going through. I'll leave it at that.
Agreed.
Caregivers and hospice workers are true angels. Producer Pete, Rodney is next. You're on WGN. Hi, Rodney. You're on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, we had a situation. My in-laws live in Florida. My mother-in-law got Alzheimer's, and then the son was taking money out of the account down there. We switched. My wife was the trust, and then they switched it to him because he lived there. Well, he started stealing money, started taking what he needed. Then we kind of got caught that, shut it off, and she passed away. Well, now they put the house in a, it's called like a ladybird asset. And we didn't want anything in our name because it's like, we want to make sure he's taken care of. So whatever happens in the end, we can use the money to help him and whatever happens. We are concerned that he may pop back into the picture and start taking money, but if you look at it and you're like, it's not our money, but at the same time, you know, if things happen, is the ladybird, is that something that you should go through, or should we have him redo it and do a trust?
Okay, hold on a second. Hold on a second. How are we doing on this, Carrie?
Well, it's pretty convoluted, but I think that you know, what you really want to do are create documents that everybody understands, everybody participates in. And if he stole money, you want to try and get it back, which is easier said than done. But
yeah.
You need transparency, you know, especially, you know, if you live in different states, everybody's got to try and be on the same page. Otherwise, you're going to end up in a courtroom, and we litigate those cases every day.
That's Carrie Peck at Peck Ritchie Law. Listen, good luck to you, Rodney. If you need more help, I'll give the address and phone number here in a second, but we're just out of time. What about this, Carrie? Does a wife get a third, as you said earlier, even if I signed a prenup 17 years ago?
No, prenups govern the inheritance relationship. So it's very, very important. Of course, prenups generally only occur after the first marriage. So, but, you know, everybody's different.
If you have a revocable trust, do you need a will?
Yes. You need what's called a pour-over will, so assets that were not put into the trust literally pour over like a water fountain into the trust.
He is a water fountain of knowledge, elder law attorney Carrie Peck. PeckRitchie.com is the website, and that consultation is free. The phone number is 312-201-0900. Call that number. Somebody really nice will pick up the phone, and they know this isn't an easy time. 312-201-0900 for Carrie Peck. That's it, my friend. We'll talk again maybe next month or so, huh?
Sounds good. Thanks, John. Always